हरिः ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे जय सो लास्ट टाइम वी वर डिस्कसिंग अबाउट हाउ अंबा नेक्स्ट लाइफ बिकेम Shikhandi. But she was born still as a girl. But Shiva said he would have a son. And so then, you know, they had faith that he would become a son. So then he's going to become a son, but how he becomes a son, right? So now he's already married. After some time, it's very hard to, for a girl who's playing as a boy and marries a girl, for the girl to not figure out that she's married to another girl, right? So then this has happened. Then the girl's father, the bride's father, then he comes with his army to chastise Drupad. And, so what to do? Now we're at that juncture. Drupad was caught like a thief. There was nothing he could say. He tried to convince Shikhandi's wife that her quote-unquote husband would in fact soon become a male, but all to no avail. I mean, since when do they just like one day you wake up and boing, you know, you're something else. The girl's father amassed a large army and marched on Kampilya. Drupad was alarmed. He said to his wife, "Fools that we are, we have brought a great calamity onto our heads. We are in danger. What should we do now, in your opinion?" Drupad and his wife concluded that their only recourse was to worship the gods. Drupad supplicated the deities while Hiranyavarma advanced on his country. Meanwhile, Shikhandi, in sorrow at the danger she felt she had brought on them all, left the city. Resolved to take her own life, she entered the forest in an area that was home to a powerful yaksha named Astuna. Finding his abode a white palace washed with lime, she entered it and sat down to practice austerities. A few days later, Stuna returned and saw her sitting there, her body reduced from fasting. Kind by nature, he asked her why she was performing asceticism. The yaksha said, "Tell me if I can do anything to help you." Shikhandi replied, "No one can give me what I desire." But Stuna did not agree. "I can surely give you whatever you wish, O princess. I am Kuvera's attendant and can grant boons." Right? So he's attending with Kuvera, so he's in a very powerful position. And with the mercy of Kuvera, he's able to do so many nice things. "I will bestow even the unbestowable. Tell me what you desire." Because most people, for them, it's an amount of wealth or positions or things like that. "Tell me what you desire." Shikhandi related the whole story in detail, concluding, "The only way to save the present situation is that I attain my manhood, O faultless one." Right? Because she's saying, "I would attain my manhood," because that was the purpose she wanted to take birth. Shiva said she would take birth as the son of Drupad. Drupad was told by Shiva that he would have a son, but first she'd be a daughter. And so she's just waiting, when will I get my manhood? Because the point is for her, by being a man, now she can fight in battle with Bhishma and kill him. Right? Because otherwise, yes, through politics or through some other things like that, or through some, you know, assassins, or things she could try. But then it only has the point of killing him. But the point is you have the aspect of prestige, or kshatriyas. So then, you know, there has to be a proper battle. There has to be a proper, you know, result and everything. There can't be cheating. Otherwise, then it's not glorious. Maybe you got your end, but it's not glorious. It's considered uncultured. So the point is you want to attain that revenge and maintain your prestige. Okay. The Yaksha, saddened by her story and feeling afflicted by destiny, considered her request carefully. Finally, he replied, "Truly, this must be so. I will, however, make a condition. I am able to grant your wish only by changing my sex with yours, but you must return my manhood after a short time." Right? In other words, she goes and works out everything, and then they have to exchange. She kindly agreed to return to Stuna as soon as Aranyavarma left Kampilia. The two then exchanged sexes, and Shikhandi went back to her father's place, palace. When Hiranyavarma's army arrived at Kampilia, he dispatched his priest to Drupad, saying, "Come out and give me battle, vile one. You have cheated me." But by then, Shikhandi had returned in a male form. Drupad said, "There has been a mistake, O Holy One. The king has been misinformed. See for yourself my son's gender." The surprised Hiranyavarma had a number of beautiful maidens sent to examine Shikhandi. When they informed him that Drupad's son was indeed male, he entered Kampilia with a glad heart. He stayed with Drupad for some time and finally returned to his own country, happy in his newfound alliance with Drupad, right? So it's uninformed, whatever it is, and like that. And even if they happened to have been female, but now he's male, and you know, that was the boon of Shiva. You know, Shiva said he would have a son, but first they'd be female, then they'd turn into a male. It doesn't matter. He's now male, Shiva said. Now so it's worked out. And even if it's not, because I doubt he'll tell his daughter that she was crazy. How do you think he was? How do you think he was female? You know, unless it was by some not seeing directly or something like this. But whatever it is, it worked out. So that's the important point. And Hiranyavarma is very happy because Drupad's a very powerful king, and so now they're two kingdoms aligned. Then now they'll be, you know, no one will bother either of them, because as we mentioned, for kings, the seventh aspect of the circle of the kingdom is allies. You have strong allies that makes everything very stable. Stuna had concealed himself in his palace, waiting for Shikhandi's return. As he waited, Kuvera happened to pass by, coursing through the skies in his heavenly chariot. He saw Stuna's palace shining beautifully and adorned with colorful banners, gems, and garlands. He approached the palace. But when no one came out to greet him, he angrily asked his attendants, "What fool lives here? Why does he not greet me?" Simyakshas then informed Kuvera what had transpired. They told him that Stuna was hiding in shame in his palace. Kuvera replied, "Bring that foolish one here. I will punish him." Stuna came out. In his woman's form, he stood bashfully before his master Kuvera. "Why have you acted in this way?" Kuvera asked. "You have humiliated the Yakshas by giving away your sex. Therefore, I curse you not to regain your masculinity. Shikhandi, too, will not regain her feminine form." The other Yakshas felt compassion for Stuna. After all, he had acted only out of kindness, right? He's just trying to help. It is a princess, and, you know, she's very distressed, and it's a very difficult situation, and he being kind by nature, then he tried to help. You know, so it may be looked at as a foolish thing, but, you know, its basis was that of kindness. And so then that's something to consider. They asked Kuvera to set a limit on his curse so that Stuna would not always be punished. Kuvera said, "When Shikhandi dies, Stuna will regain his male form. Let him be free of anxiety." So, yes, it will. But we have to remember, they're Yakshas and that, they're demigods. So they're going to live for a long time. So in this case, for them, it's going to be a very short time. You know, Shikhandi will be there, and, you know, that then there'll be the battle and that. So even if it is, you know, it'll be some months for him by demigod time, like that. The powerful Kuvera, who can travel long distances in a moment, then left with his followers. Shortly after, Shikhandi returned. "O Stuna, as we have agreed, I now return your manhood." Stuna replied, "It has been ordained that manhood shall be yours for this life. O noble one, be pleased to return to your abode." Hearing this, Shikhandi returned in joy to Kampilia. So, it means Shikhandi wanted to be a boy so she could fight in the battle and kill Bhishma. But at the same time, as, you know, for the situation, then the fathers and all this difficulties coming up just over her and this difficulty that she has. And so then, She wanted to get rid of that. And because, you know, they had made a promise, he was helping her, she has to return that kindness. And so then she came to like that. And so then Stuna is very pleased that she came back and all this, but he said, no, it's been ordained that you'll stay a man. And so then you know, like that. Because, you know, that's what he said, oh, noble one, won, because being a princess, you know, generally with princesses, you'll say beautiful and this and that, or... And with the princes, he'll say noble and all that. So now he's respecting him like that, but he is noble because he also came back like that. So, you know, that's a nice thing. When Bhishma finished telling the story, he added, thus, Shikhandi, formerly Amba, hates me, but because he was first born a woman, I will never raise weapons against him. I have vowed thus, I will not fight with weapons against women, or those who bear women's names, or even those who appear like women. O Duryodhana, I will not fight with Shikhandi, even if he attacks me, desiring my death. Duryodhana nodded. He looked at Bhishma with respect. Even though the grandfather was often cutting and harsh towards him, the prince could not deny his nobility. Placing his hand on the royal scepter, Duryodhana said, O son of Ganga, we will now have to fight the mighty Pandava army, abounding in heroes equal to the universal protectors. The army will be as difficult to cross as the ocean. Tell me, O grandsire, how long you feel it will take you to annihilate them. Bhishma's old leathery face, adorned with a flowing white beard, broke into a smile. It is fitting that you should ask, Duryodhana. A leader must know both the strengths and weaknesses of both the enemy and himself before beginning the fight. All right, so... That's the thing, is he's saying it's fitting that you ask this. Because we see before, in all discussions before, except for this one, then Karna and Duryodhana, and of course Dushasana also, then they don't consider the strengths and weaknesses of the other, only the weaknesses of the others and their own strengths. They never consider their own weaknesses, and they never considered the strength of the Pandavas. So then Bhishma is pointing out that this is a very, important point that you're asking. It's befitting. You know, because otherwise, if you don't consider these things, you will lose. Like that. Here then, of the utmost power I will display in this war. Using ordinary weapons on ordinary soldiers and celestial weapons on those versed in them, I can slay 10,000 foot soldiers and 1,000 charioteers a day. Or it may be more. If I become fired with anger when I release my weapons, I can destroy many more men than that. However, you should know that I will only fight fairly. Right? You won't do something unfair. Bhishma reminded Duryodhana of the rules of battle, which he would not break. For example, heroes should never use divine weapons to kill lesser warriors. The fight should always be equal. Even if one possessed celestial weapons, he should contend only hand to hand with a weaponless weapon if such became necessary. Right, so that was the point, is that if they're fighting with bows and arrows, they both fight. He loses his bow and takes up a sword or a mace, then you fight with that. If those are lost, then hand to hand they'll fight. They'll always make it equal. Bhishma's hand touched his bow, because otherwise, if you have weapons and he doesn't, what's the glory in you winning? You can say, oh, well, we won. But then where's the point of being a Kshatriya? You know, animals also win. You know, the tiger chases down a deer, you know, he did run it down. But then the python just sits there and animals come along and he swallows them. You know, so you will get your food, you know. So the point is that's what makes the Kshatriyas, is that willingness to have an equal battle and win in that battle, that shows that they're greater. Otherwise, if you have a weapon and they don't, you could be someone who is completely useless against somebody who is so trained. That's the problem with modern warfare, is you can have someone of lesser training and ability be able to kill someone of much greater ability just because you have these modern weapons. Bhishma's hand touched his bow. In this way, O king, by fighting ceaselessly throughout the day, I can slay the enemy army in 1 month. Right, means because if every day is 1,000, you know, that's 30,000 that he's killed, you know, and then 30,000, you know, it means a lot of the charioteers. So basically, he'll destroy the army in a month. Cheering Bhishma. So then he's saying if he's going to do this every day, then they know that that's the maximum that the battle will go is for 1 month. Cheering Bhishma. Duryodhana turned to Drona. Oh, preceptor, what about you? How long do you think it would take you to overcome the enemy? Like Bhishma, Drona smiled at Duryodhana. I am old and have lost some of my strength. Still, I will exert myself fully and consume the Pandava army by the fire of my weapons. I also think I can annihilate all the warriors in about a month. Kripa said it would take him 2 months, and Ashwatthama, bolder, said he could do it in 10 days. Karna said he could annihilate the enemy in 5 days, at which Bhishma laughed and said, you may speak in such strains only as long as you do not encounter Arjuna with his weapons and his conch. Guided by Vasudev, say whatever you will, son of Radha, for talk is cheap. Karna frowned but remained silent. Duryodhana continued questioning his generals and commanders, ascertaining their power and determination to fight. The Kauravas discussed their battle plans well into the night. Soon after sunrise, the fight would begin. Right, so you see the others are giving, you know, an actual position like that. But you see is that Ashwatthama and Karna, then they're saying a much greater exaggeration because they're not as great a fighter as Bhishma and Drona. You know, unless they're breaking the rules. He's using celestial weapons to get rid of, you know, kill ordinary warriors and stuff like that. Then, yeah, he probably could do it in a few days. But the thing that they're not considering is, you know, the other side, Pandavas, they're fighting and everything. This is just what they themselves could do. But it doesn't mean the battle will go that long, because even if they're killing at that rate, it also the other side's killing on their side. And so if they have no army left, then, and it doesn't mean in that time that Duryodhana won't die or, you know, something. So chapter 3. So that's why then you see is that Drona, and they smiled, you know. And he also again called him son of Radha. You know, so that was the point, is that he's pointing out that you're not really, this is not the mature behavior. Chapter 3, Interposition. Early the next morning, Yudhishthira made his final preparations. His spies had reported to him everything that had taken place in Duryodhana's tent the previous evening. Anxiously, he said to Arjuna, you have heard how Bhishma claims he can slay our army in 1 month. Drona has said the same. All the Kaurava heroes have stated their determination. Karna even suggested he could defeat the armies in 5 days. Tell me, O Falguni, how long you think it will take you to kill them? Arjuna glanced across at Krishna. The Kuru warriors are all high-minded heroes who are expert in wielding weapons. But do not be anxious, dear brother. Our enemies will not have the chance to slay us. I say truly that, with Krishna's aid, I can uproot the 3 worlds in a moment. I possess Shiva's personal weapon, which alone is capable of annihilating the creation. None of the Kauravas know this weapon. Of course, would not be proper for me to use it against them, but there will be no need. We shall gain victory by the mere strength of our arms. Arjuna indicated the many kings present with a sweep of his hand. Besides me, you have numerous heroes on your side. By ranging among the enemy ranks in our chariots, we will soon cause great destruction. Of course, we also have you, O king. Surely whomever you cast your angry glance upon will immediately be consumed like dry leaves in a fire. I do not see how the Kauravas can win this war. Comforted, Yudhishthira continued to arrange for the day's first battle. His commanders surrounded him, clad in armor. All had been purified by sacred rituals and bestowed wealth upon the Brahmins. With their ornamented swords swinging by their sides, they left the tent one by one to lead their respective divisions into position. The early morning sun rose to reveal the vast Kurukshetra field covered by the two armies. They seemed like two great oceans drawing against one another. The sound of the armies filled the heavens like the low rumbling of clouds in autumn. When everything had been finalized, Yudhishthira himself left the tent, followed by his brothers and Krishna. On all sides, they saw cheerful troops preparing their weapons and chariots. As the Pandavas and Krishna mounted their cars, crowds of Brahmins praised Yudhishthira and offered prayers to Krishna. And so now they're ready. Everything's been set up. So now they're going out to take their place. So then how it's going to unfold, we shall see next discussion. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.